Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. We should know that personal finance isn't about being rich or getting rich quick. It's about buying independence and freedom of choice. You are not alone as you struggle with being the perfect wife, mother, daughter, daughter-in-law, and all the other traditional roles assigned to us by our culture. These pressures can feel overwhelming, and when we add the demands of a career, on top of it all, many women choose to pass on dealing with money issues until they're forced to, and that's not the best time to learn. Here we explore the stories of women and how they have handled the demands of finances, family, and career. We talk about falling short of perfection, but also about the lessons we've learned and the best advice our peers have to offer for financial security and putting our perceived failures in their proper place. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Dr. Marcy Beagle. Welcome, Marcy.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm so thrilled to be here with you today.
Well, I'm happy that you're happy with that, because I can't wait to dig into this. I love this topic.
It's a great topic to talk about money. I'm so excited.
Well, good, because I think that there's a connection here between what you're talking about in your world and mine, and we'll explore that in a second or two. But let me just give our listeners just a little bit of a story about your bio. Who is Marcy Beagle? You've redesigned behavior for professionals, families, schools, and businesses for close to 20 years. Your specialty is engaging with behaviors directly and giving clear and insightful directives to clients who are oftentimes business owners looking for balance at home to help create balance at work, or new approaches to become better leaders. Your approach is heartfelt but filled with tough love. You can get Marcy's weekly behavior newsletter at behaviorandbeyond.net. Dr. Marcy is also featured on NBC's Parenting Toolkit, and her upcoming book, Love Your Classroom Again, is filled with actionable strategies to manage behavior, and that's coming out tomorrow, if I understand.
Yeah, September 15th.
Yeah, so even though you may be listening to this at a different time, folks, that's the big date is September 15th.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So when did you write the book, Marcy?
It's been over the past year and a half I've been writing it.
What inspired you to do it?
I've had many, many people that I've met over the years say to me, "Where's your book?" And I went, "In my head."
Okay.
So I get that. Exactly.
I sat down
and started writing it. I had a publisher actually ask me to write a book for teachers, and I wrote the outline. And unfortunately, the publisher wasn't enthused about it. But as I started talking to teachers and educators in the world, I was hearing that the way I had designed the book was really needed and that nobody was talking about behavior in this way. And so I decided to move forward and do it myself.
And you self-published through?
I self-published through Amazon.
So did I.
Amazing. They make it so deliciously easy. Yeah, it's been a really great experience.
Yeah, my book is called Power of the Purse. Obviously, that's the name of the podcast. And I had the same experience. I used createspace.com. Yeah. And I thought it's just so easy to do this. I'm just surprised that more people aren't doing it. I mean, I think the hardest part for me was to get the editing done so that it was really crisp. And once I got that done, that was professionally done, they uploaded the entire manuscript, and blammo, I've got a book. It was so neat. When you got the first copy of it, how did you feel?
Oh, I sat on my couch for an hour just in awe, just in complete shock and awe that I was it's what I don't have my own children, but it's what I expect mothers feel when they first hold their baby, right? I was just, I made this and I created it and it took so long to put all the pieces together and here it is. And there was such a reverence for me to hold it for the first time and be like, this is my blood, sweat, and tears.
This is real.
Yep. Yeah.
I had the same experience. I did. I was not prepared for actually holding it in my hand. And I had the same sense. It's like I birthed this thing. And it's just so amazing. I loved it. It was a great experience. So is your next one in your head?
Oh, yeah. My next one was in my head as soon as I finished. You can only do so many chapters in one book before it becomes overwhelming. So the next set is already ready. So this is Love Your Classroom Again. I already have, outlining in my subconscious the Love Your Family Again.
Oh, that's great. That's a good one. I love it. Mm-hmm. So I'll bet you whoever the publisher was that decided they didn't want to do it is probably going to kick him or herself for that one.
Maybe, or maybe, there's always possibilities for the future.
Yes, that's true.
Love Your Business Again. Love Your Money Again. We could chat about that.
Yep. So, you do it all. It's a nice theme.
Yeah. Love Your Relationship Again. It's so many possibilities.
Yeah. So I asked you a question in the pre-interview that you said you responded to, and I said, what do you do for fun? And you said you live in Brooklyn where you practice yoga and craniosacral therapy in your off time. Would you please explain to me what craniosacral therapy is?
Yeah. So craniosacral therapy its lineage is out of osteopathy. So it's similar to chiropractic, right? Mm-hmm. The body work that's done on a massage table, fully clothed, but with chiropractic where they use momentum and force to realign the bones of your body. With craniosacral therapy, it's a really gentle movement where it's more of an invitation to your bones to realign. The belief is that our bodies know how to restore health. So if you create the space and the invitation to your body to do it, it can heal itself in so many amazing ways.
And how did you get involved with that?
When I went to yoga teacher training, the woman who did the anatomy course had studied craniosacral therapy. And I was fascinated by when she talked about the muscles and the bones and how it all works. And turned out she was doing a workshop 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later on craniosacral therapy. So I did a month training in yoga and then came home and said, oh, I'm out, and left for another week to go do a craniosacral training.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a fierce learner.
Just like that. There it was, huh?
There it was. Sometimes the next step is just right there in front of you.
It sure is. You just have to be in the right place at the right time, and there it is. Let's talk about your other training. You're a board-certified behavior analyst doctorate, and you earned your doctorate from Teachers College, Columbia University, and a New York State certification as a special ed teacher. So how did all that develop? Where was your initial interest in doing this kind of work?
When I was in high school, as a young person, I went to a day camp. And then when I was in high school, I was a counselor at that day camp. And when I went to college, my parents, in all of their wisdom, said to me, you may not go back to the day camp. You need to go get a real job.
Oh.
And in all of my wisdom, I said, fine, I'll go work at a camp for kids with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up in a group with 8 little boys with autism.
Wow.
And they were the most amazing humans I have ever met in my entire life. And I fell in love with working with children diagnosed with autism. And I went back to college and I said, okay, well, now what do I do? And looked in the psych department and there was an ad saying, come work with my child who has autism, we'll train you. And they trained me in behaviorism. And they trained me in a practice called ABA, applied behavior analysis. And that was the start of my career path. And I just kept saying, oh, well, I need to learn more. And if I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, I need to go get my master's in it. And once I got that, there were more questions I had. And I wanted to look at the relationship between parents and teachers in the context of families receiving services. And went back to do my dissertation on that topic. So I just kept taking the next step and eventually had a doctorate and my behavioral certification and my teaching certification. And, step by step, I got there. Amazing how those journeys happen.
Didn't I read something on your website about some experience you had personally as a child that you were put into some advanced courses or something like that, and that kind of made you feel like You had something different going on as opposed to the rest of your class.
So that's half the story. Yes.
Okay.
So I was in elementary school, I was in the gifted and talented program. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, I was in resource room.
Oh.
So yeah, a combination that unfortunately would never happen these days in the way the school system is, but was remarkable because I really was struggling with how to read. There's definitely, I've been tested for special needs several times in my life. And what is always told as the result is she's compensating so well, we can't really decode what's happening, but something's a little crossed. So I know that there's something a little bit off. And I was really struggling to read. So resource room really helped me get there. And then being in the gifted and talented program allowed me to use all of that creativity that was inside of me. And that combination was incredible for me.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you see the reverse of that now when you are on the other side of that, when you are a teacher and someone who's looking at the system. So how have you been able to make any changes in that method of treating a child who had some of the same issues you did?
I think for me, it is that I just want children to be seen for who they are. That behavior, while it is oftentimes something that we need to change because it's being disruptive, it's a form of communication. It's not a form that a kid's bad or awful or there's something wrong with them. Or, you know, my favorite is I've had teachers being like, they're just possessed.
Oh,
yeah.
They actually use those words.
Oh, yeah. I've had kids that are 5 years old and directors of schools tell me that they're going to be a sociopath one day. I mean, the concepts we put on kids is so detrimental. And I think having had the experience I've had of teachers really seeing all of the good and all of my struggles and helping me through both pieces, I want to bring that forward. I wanted teachers to take a step back and say, yes, this behavior is challenging and we need to change it, not ostracize the child for it, not punish them for it, but help to understand what's happening and change it. And with a few simple tools, we can usually make significant difference.
Yeah. So your, let's call it your forum, so to speak, is within the context of the school system. But I know that you also do work privately with families to help them deal with, I think you refer to them as small beings.
I do.
Tell me how you do that.
So my private practice is many, many families, is really most of what my day-to-day of my private practice is. And I go into homes and I do 3-hour home sessions with families. Because I really want to go through the challenging behavior with them, show the parents different ways to deal with it. And then after the tantrum, then go cook dinner, then still need to get homework done, right? So I'm there for the real life part of what's going on for them. It's not in my office separated for 45 minutes and then I send them back into the world. I want to make the change for the families in their world. And then paired with that, I do phone sessions with parents, really talking to them about the strategies they've put in place, about what we've talked about, what they saw in the home session, so that they can really own the tools, put them into their lives, and so that I can really get fired as a support network, as opposed to having to stay there forever. So my goal is really to give the parents and the teachers the behavioral tools that kids need and then get out.
And it's reminding me of something. I know you've probably heard this before. The woman who does the show on TV, who's the nanny that comes in.
Yep.
And I just marvel at how she has that extra sense of immediately she can assess the situation, knows what to do with it, and instructs the parents. They change their attitude, their behavior, whatever, and presto changeo, the child is a completely different human being.
Exactly.
And I think that's marvelous.
Yeah. I mean, there are only a handful of reasons behaviors happen. And for all of the different variations of all of the things we see, they really get broken down in just to 4 functions or 4 components. And when you can have done this for as long as I have and as long as Super Nanny has, you can just see it and it's really easy to be, oh, this is the category that goes into and therefore that's what we need to provide.
Can you share with us what those 4 categories are?
Absolutely. It's attention, right? Kids that want your attention,
mm-hmm.
which under attention, to be clear, is also when the kids want something that you are in control of. right? If there's some kind of tangible that they want from you, like if the cookies are up in a high cabinet, or if there's a toy that you need to get out of a cabinet for them. So you'll sometimes get behavior for that. And also kids that really want control, because control is only a problem if you're paying attention to it, right? So control and tangibles go under attention. Then there's escape. I want to get out of here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this anymore. The third is because it feels good, right? I just really like watching lights flicker on and off. I just really like the way certain materials feel. And it's fine as long as it's socially acceptable, but you need to change the ones that aren't, right? My favorite example of that is nose picking, right? It does. It feels good. That's why kids do it.
Also apply to men over a certain age?
Yeah, because they just don't care anymore, right? They're like, forget it. It's just so much easier than getting a tissue. Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. All right. And the fourth one is?
The fourth one is medical, when there's something medically wrong. And unfortunately, as a behavior specialist, I can't help you with the medical one. But, you know, for me, the epitome of that example is when I was in elementary school, when I was in third grade, was when they found out that my vision was off. And it was back in the days when we talked about 20/20 vision. And when I got my eyes assessed, it was 20/200. So what something at 20 feet, it looked like it was 200 feet away from me. So you can imagine that in a classroom, when the teacher says, I'm writing the page numbers on the board for you to read, and I would look up there and I would see nothing because I couldn't see it. It looked like it was, 200 feet away. And I assumed she hadn't written it yet. And I would talk to my friend. I got in trouble, but I didn't know that I was misbehaving. I was waiting.
Right.
So we luckily live in a time when it is so easy to assess the medical needs. So we can very easily take that off the table.
Okay. Now, another question I had for you is, you also talk about doing this for professionals. So How do you do that in the work world? How does that happen?
So the amazing thing about behavior is it's all the same regardless of the relationship, right? So whether it's parent to child or teacher to child or parent to parent or employee to employer or business owner to customer, the way we behave follows the same rules. We just are inserting different variables. So what I found over time was that the same principles that I talk with for families and teachers apply to a business. And so I have been able to go into different businesses, and depending on the person who's hiring me, whether it's, the head of the company who wants me to train their employees, or whether it's the head of a small business who wants to be able to do more, or whether it's an employee who's saying, I want to go make my dreams come true. I don't want to be in this position anymore. Talking through what they're doing, understanding a little bit about why they're doing it, but it's really about the actions they take and taking the next step towards making it happen.
All right. So give me an example. Like if I am, let's say I'm a CFO of a major corporation, not a public corporation, but a local company. We've got maybe a couple hundred employees.
Yeah.
What would I be looking for, and what would be the things that you might be able to help us with?
So if you want to increase job performance, if you want people to be more invested in their job and therefore bring in more creativity, if you're finding that your employees are having a lot of conflict and don't know how to resolve the conflicts between each other. If you're finding that people are distracted because I've had one company who they were finding their employees were distracted because of problems at home, and they actually had me come in and talk about parenting.
Oh.
Yeah. But my favorite to talk about with businesses is how to really find the drive that gets you. Why are you doing the job you're doing? What is it that helps you stay motivated and excited about what you're doing? And when you have a group of a couple hundred employees, if you can get them motivated and excited and then translate that into action for what they're currently supposed to be doing, your productivity increases significantly.
Sure does.
But Unfortunately, one of my biggest rules is that you need to choose honey. You need to reinforce, you need to celebrate and be excited about things. And bringing in that principle alone to any business changes the entire culture.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
That's good. So how much of your business is devoted to private practice with corporations, and how much of it is really with families and children?
It really varies. I would say I am always at least 2/3 with families. It's where my reputation is, where most people know me from, right? So I'm slowly moving into more businesses, but okay. It depends on, you know, if people contact me, when I have openings, what's happening. In the summer, it's much easier for me to be in businesses because kids are out and school's out of session. But there's some flux depending on who's reaching out at what point.
Okay. That makes sense. It's definitely on a calendar basis. Let me turn this around to asking you something about your relationship with money, because I'm always fascinated to hear how people react to these questions, especially if they're successful in other fields. So let me start by saying, what was your family like when you were growing up?
My family was and is amazing. I have an older sister who's 2 years older than me, and two parents, a mom and a dad, who are still happily married to each other.
Yay.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
So you're the youngest of two.
Yes, I am.
Okay. So what's your first memory around money?
In my family, my dad had grown up without money. And by the time I met him and he had a family, he was working in finance and has done really well for himself. But his old habits die hard, right? So he's still very careful with money, very aware of it. And when I was growing up, it was just when shaker tops were coming out in salad dressings.
Yeah.
And they were 25 cents more, right? To buy a salad dressing with a shaker top was 25 cents more than the regular salad dressing. And I can picture being at dinner and opening the salad dressing and my dad jesting, but yelling, but exacerbatingly saying to my mom, you did it. You bought the shaker top. You bought the shaker top. To this day, it is still a joke in my family. Such lightness and humor and clear intention of, you know, if you don't need to spend it frivolously, don't. But it was done in a way that I have a really good relationship with money. And I think that's a big piece of it because that's how we talked about it.
Yeah. But the good news is you talked about it. Most families don't.
Yeah.
There's never a conversation about money. It's one of those taboo topics.
Right.
It's right there alongside sex. You know, you never hear about any of it, but you know what's happening.
Yeah. My parents did a really good job talking about money in a way that I was never scared. I never knew if there was financial problems in my family. I always felt like there was plenty for everything I needed. Mm-hmm. And it was an open conversation. Like in high school, we had vending machines in the cafeteria, and my parents had a draw with singles that they would leave in the dining room for me and my sister to take in case we wanted to get a snack along with the lunch we brought.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's very generous.
It was very generous, but it also really taught us trust.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
And if I took $50 out of there, I knew I'd be in trouble, right? I could only take a dollar a day.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't regulated so strictly because by the time I was in high school, they had taught us the responsibility around money.
Well, has there ever been anything threatening to your financial security?
I find that a really hard question because of the concept of threatening. I think that my disposition is to look at challenges and say, okay, what am I supposed to be learning here? What do I need to change? What can I shift? As opposed to when I hear threatening, I think of fear, right? Oh, I get scared. And right. So there have been, I've had the same career for a long time. And as an entrepreneur and business owner who's been, you know, a consultant for many, many, many years, I would probably say all of my career except for 1 year when I worked in a school, there have been times where all of my kids, all of my cases, all of the people I've been working with disappear like that. Right. And it's like I get 2 weeks notice and somehow everyone's gone at the same time.
Wow. I'd say that's threatening.
Right. And go, oh, God.
Yeah.
And somehow.
So then how did you deal with that? You had no income.
Right. Well, one of the ways I deal with that is I have always worked more than I've had to. So there's always been a safety net. The other way I deal with that is I then stopped and I said, okay, well, what do I need to do differently? What's going on here? Do I have to shift my billing practices? Do I have to shift my networking practices? Am I supposed to go do something else right now? And one of those moments when that happened, I actually ended up saying, well, I have no kids right now. There's a yoga teacher training I want to do in 3 weeks. I'm going to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
And took it as an opportunity rather than as a fear-based, oh no, what's going to happen?
Well, that is refreshing to hear someone say that, because many people get to that point where they really hit a wall and it's almost a panic state. But I think the way you said you approach this is, what do I need to do here? What needs to shift is great. It's a great way to be, especially if you're a business owner. You have to. What are the events that have happened in your life that you would describe as defining moments?
Well, I got to say publishing my book.
Yeah, that's a big
one. That is just a huge defining moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as much as I want to say getting my doctorate was a defining moment, it was much more when I could stand tall and say, I have my doctorate. I'm Dr. Marcy. Nice to meet you. And mm-hmm. feel really confident and secure that I had all of the knowledge and experience to back that up.
Yeah.
And I think that the third one I would say would be, I've moved my practice from working hourly, the way we think of therapy and tutoring to work hourly. I've moved everything to packages. And I did that about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And it broke the therapeutic model. People call and are very confused about what I'm talking about, but I explain it to them and it has given me so much more freedom to show up and provide all of the help that I wanted to in a way that feels really clear and good for me. Yeah. I never like counting every minute. And yep. I needed to get away from that so I could just say, you've got me. I've got you. We're in this together. And not have to worry about what's going to happen at the end of the month.
Did you get any pushback from existing clients when you did that, made that shift?
I didn't get any pushback from existing clients. I still get pushback from new clients who just, it doesn't make sense to them. They're not used to it. So it's confusing. And oftentimes the unknown feels scary. So mm-hmm. the concept that I want you to be able to call me when you're in crisis, if there's a problem, I want to know, and I don't want you to be worried that it's going to increase what you have to pay me. You
yeah.
took care of it. I'm here. And that for me has been such a peace of mind to explain to people, and has really allowed certain people to show up more fully and ask for all of the help they need, which has resulted in bigger, faster, more significant changes.
Do you ever see yourself being retired?
No. Uh-uh. I love what I do, and it feels like it's just who I am, right?
Yeah. So,
while I don't sit around and talk to my friends and analyze their kids all the time, I wouldn't have many friends if that's what I did. But there is a piece of me that if you are my friend and you have a problem, I'm going to show up for you and we're going to figure it out, which is exactly what I do for parents and teachers and businesses and anyone I'm working with. And so it feels like my career and what I get paid to do is a piece of who I am. So while I expect over the years it will shift and change, there will mm-hmm. always be something that I'm doing because I love it.
That's obvious. You can tell that there's a very thin separation between who you are and what you do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you want to be financially 5 years from now?
Oh, I love that question. So the honest answer is I want to be in a place that I cannot even dream of right now.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's really big. I like it.
It's one of the ways that I love to write goals. It's, I want this or more. I want this or better. And I always include as one of my goals as I want it to be better than I could ever dream.
That's great. I like that. That's great phrasing. The other thing I was just thinking about when you said something about being in the presence of your friends who have children, where do you draw the line? When you see something going on and you know that there's something you could do to make a difference, do you keep your mouth shut until they ask, or do you volunteer information?
I only keep my mouth shut when I'm in public and there are strangers, because
okay.
they really don't like when you accost them or like, wait, I know some things and can I help you? It has not gone well for me. But when it comes to my friends, on the subways in New York City, not the time to be telling people how to help with their kids.
Exactly.
But in terms of my friends and people that I love and care about in my life, I am very transparent with them. I am very clear. I will not always, in the moment of a problem, take that as the opportunity to tell them what I think. But I will, if I'm present and it feels like a good moment, I will ask, do you want some help? Do you want me to step in? but I will always find a time if I see something that I'm concerned about to have a really good heart to heart with a friend. It's one of my favorite things is to be able to take what I have spent so much time doing for other people and bring it into the homes and families of people that I truly love.
Yeah, that's a great way. That's a good perspective to have on it. Yeah, because a lot of people sometimes feel that it's intrusive and, you know, I didn't ask for your advice and blah, blah, blah. And so I just think if you stand in that place that you just mentioned, that you're doing it for people that you love because you know you can make a difference, it's got to come across that way. And, right. And that's a good place to be when you're talking about any kind of consulting work.
Exactly. And I will also respect if I say, look, I saw something I'm worried about and they're like, I don't want to talk about it. I absolutely respect that as well.
Okay. Yeah. You know, well, at least you gave them the opportunity.
Exactly. And I think that that's the piece for me that feels really important is to let them know that I have some knowledge if they want it.
And who is the most influential woman in your life?
I would have to say my mother.
Yay.
Yeah, she has been.
Yay, mom.
Yeah, she has been a fierce force in my life and probably my biggest cheerleader ever.
That's nice.
Yeah, she's really taught me that, you know, having learning challenges as a kid, my mom sat at my kitchen table with me and did so much homework. She probably, you know, deserves a second degree for all of it. You know, but she
is her name on the diploma too? Or
she would like it to be, but I didn't let that. I was like, that is mine.
Okay.
But through all of that and being on the side of the work that I am now, the thing that I find remarkable about my mother is that I never knew that she was scared. I never knew that she was worried about me. She just showed up and took care of me and taught me I could do anything I wanted and always believed in me. So I never had any reservations that I could go get my doctorate when I wanted to, because my parents didn't tell me that they didn't think I would make it through college until after my doctorate. I heard that piece of information.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah. That
well, really tough noogies on them because you went right for it and did it. I think that's wonderful.
Exactly. And part of that is they didn't tell me that they were scared. They acted like the adults. They were the parents. They held their own fear together and only gave me the message that I can do anything. And to me, that is the most remarkable gift that you can give anyone because, you know, I showed up and did anything. I did anything I wanted and still believe that. And a big piece of that is because it was instilled in me from a very young age.
That's great parenting,
yeah.
As far as I can see. Let me ask you one last question here. What area of personal finances are you most uncomfortable with?
What area of personal finances am I most uncomfortable with? I think I would have to say investing, but that's mostly because I, you know, my dad being in finance, I have said to him, here's what I want to be investing. Go do something brilliant with it.
Okay.
You know, so I'm not really in the conversation of the day-to-day of what really the best decisions are, but mm-hmm. found someone that I really trust, that I know is knowledgeable, that I know has been amazingly successful to trust.
Well, so, there's a good guy to trust. If it's anybody, it's
exactly.
your father. That's terrific.
Yeah.
But okay.
I find that to be true in business and across the board, that the areas that I am most uncomfortable with or least skilled in, mm-hmm. I find someone and I'm happy to hire them to do it because it is the best way to accomplish that and get it done.
That's great. Okay. So all of you in my Power of the Purse community, these were invaluable insights and perspectives from Dr. Marcy Beagle, all of which can help you move forward in your career, your life, your relationships, and financial freedom. Again, we want to talk about her upcoming book, Love Your Classroom Again, which will be available starting September 15th. And I thank you so much, Dr. Marcy, for being on this show. And how could our listeners get in touch with you?
Thank you, Lynn. It has been so much fun chatting with you today. It's been great. They can find me on my website, www.behaviorandbeyond.net. And while they're there, sign up for my mailing list. They can also email me at info@behaviorandbeyond.net. And they can find my book on Amazon. Love Your Classroom Again, right
here. Yay.
Yeah.
And congratulations on that.
Thank you so very, very much.
Okay, everybody, we're gonna leave now and hope that you will be back to listen to us the next time. We were talking with Dr. Marcy Beagle, and this is Power of the Purse Podcast. Goodbye.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.